But first today, I'm joined by Cillian de Gascoigne, Chair of NPHET's Coronavirus Expert Advisory Group and, of course, Director of the National Virus Reference Laboratory. You're very welcome, Cillian.
Thanks, Katie.
These three Brazilian variant cases that have been confirmed now by the Department of Health, what can you tell us about those?
So if we look back to, I suppose, the story behind this Brazilian variant, it first emerged in January in probably in Manaus in Brazil. And the reason it became a cause of concern is because Manaus was very severely affected in the first wave back in April. So there was data from blood donor studies that suggested that somewhere in the region of maybe 60 or 70% of the population of Manaus had been exposed to SARS coronavirus type 2 during the first wave. So there was a suggestion that they really had a level of community population, sort of a herd immunity, as people are calling it. So when this, when they had this second sort of severe, I suppose, increase in activity in January, there was a concern as to why that would happen. So there was some investigation done, some sequencing, looking at the virus, and this variant was identified. So based on the fact that it emerged in the context of what we believe was sort of near population level immunity, there were questions sort of asked in the context of, you know, was the seroprevalence rate in Manaus, was it overestimated? Was it just a case of waning immunity? So people that were infected back in April were now losing their immunity, or was it the virus itself? Was it more transmissible?
And could people be reinfected?
And basically, based on the information that we have to date, I suppose they're the two things that we're concerned about. Because if we look at the date of emergence of this potential of this variant, we unfortunately it would not have been included in a lot of the vaccine studies for the last 12 months because it's really only come to light in January. So we know that if we look at the mutations or amino acid changes that it has in the spike protein, and again, it shares some of those with the variant, those variants that were first reported in the UK and in South Africa. So we believe it's likely that it's more transmissible. We believe that it has amino acid changes that could well have an impact on the vaccine effectiveness, but we don't have hard data yet, purely because, as I said, it wouldn't have been included in those trials.
Okay. But in these particular cases, can you tell me, you know, how were they detected? How do we know about them?
Yeah, like I can understand people's concern about this report last night, but actually this is an example of the system working. These individuals are all part of the same cluster. They came back, they quarantined, they contacted their GP or HSE Live to arrange to be tested. Their test result came back, RNA was detected, public health was notified, the individuals have been contact traced, the sequence of the samples were sent to the National Virus Reference Laboratory for sequencing, and whole genome sequencing confirmed the novel variant, and the cases have been contained. I believe contact tracing is probably still going on. I can't say for definite that's complete, but we've no evidence of on-island sort of transmission of this variant. As I said, the system worked in this case. These people did exactly what they were supposed to do.
As far as we know, this cluster is completely contained.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important to highlight, so the HSE since sort of January,
can I just ask you, how sick were these people? Were they in hospital or are they in hospital?
So I don't have access to that information, Katie. My understanding is that they're not, that they're in the community, but I wouldn't be 100% certain on that.
Okay, but, and we don't know when this sequence of events happened.
They travelled back in early February, is my understanding. But I think it's important for people to realise again, so we've obviously been doing targeted testing of people returning from South Africa and from Brazil since early in the new year. And while we hadn't identified this particular variant prior to this, we have identified other lineages from Brazil. So the system has been fairly robust over the last couple of weeks. Now, it's possible that there are people who haven't come forward, and obviously it's always difficult to control for that. But as I said, in this case, the system did work.
And do we know that they quarantined from their arrival in this country?
Yes, we're
confident of that.
Yeah.
Okay. And they obviously then had symptoms and...
I can't speak to their symptomatology, but my understanding is that they arranged to have the test done in accordance with the HSE guidance at the time.
Okay. Can I ask you then about the other variant that you mentioned there, the South African variant? We know we had 11 cases detected the last time we spoke about this.
Yeah.
Has there been any other detections of that since then?
Yes, we've had three additional detections this week, but again, all linked to travel and no evidence of onward transmission on the island. So we're up to about 14
there now. These
are
all people who actually were in South Africa.
Yes, yep.
And again, these are people who quarantined, are they? Do we have any issues about onward transmission?
No.
Okay.
Not at this stage.
Moving on then, can I ask you about our current levels of cases as they are at the moment? We're plateauing and at quite a high level. What are you in NPHET putting that down to right now?
So I suppose speaking as a virologist, I would hope that we're not plateauing. Certainly the rate of decline is slowing, and I think that was discussed at the press briefing on Thursday evening. we have seen that rate of decline. I think it's now about between sort of maybe between 4 and 6% per week, when it was up sort of around 9%. The R0 is maybe it's tricking upwards slightly to between 0.65, 0.85, whereas again, it was down a bit lower. But what I would be saying to people, unfortunately, if people think that this is harder now, it is harder now. This is a new virus that we're dealing with. We know what we had last year was a different virus. The UK, the variant that was first reported in the UK, lineage B117, is more transmissible. We know that. So unfortunately, this will be harder for people. So, but it's important that people don't lose heart. They've achieved a huge amount over the last number of weeks. People have done really, really well. And as I said, I appreciate that they're getting frustrated.
Sorry to cut across to you there, Cillian, but we did see that research from the SRI and the social activity measure, that behavioural research, saying that people think they're doing really well and really believe that they're doing their best, but actually that they are still having too many discretionary contacts.
I think that's just a measure of how difficult this is for people. Like, but I think the level of contacts are still really low. I think it's, again, I think it's increased ever so slightly from about 2 to maybe closer to 2.4. It was up to around 6 sort of over the December-January period. So people have done really well in bringing that down, and it is really difficult to sustain it at that level. But as you said earlier, it's vital that we do sustain it at that earlier. We can't afford to plateau. We had 6,000 cases, roughly speaking, in the last week. We'll have another 5,000 to 6,000 this week. And I think while vaccination, for example, is a really important good news story and it will be really helpful, vaccination isn't going to impact this week, next week, the following week. So it's really important that people do continue to adhere to the public health guidance around washing hands, physical distancing and minimising their contacts, because we're close to coming through this, but at the same time, we're still a long way off.
Are we like the 9 or 10 weeks that we've been hearing? I think people's hearts are in their toes with the news over the last few days and the leaks about where we might be going in terms of restrictions. But will we need those 9 or 10 weeks into the end of April to get this down to the level that NPHET would be comfortable seeing things opening up?
I think it's really difficult to put a definitive timeline on it, purely because it all comes down to the rate of decline. If you look to where we were, say, at the start of December, we were around 250 cases when we start to ease restrictions, and we saw how quickly things can kick off with this virus. And bear in mind that back at the start of December, the majority of the virus was wild type. It was before the introduction of the dominance of the variant from the UK, that was reported in the UK. So we're now at around between 3 and 4 times that level. So realistically, until we get down to, ideally we want to get as low as possible. Like, vaccination is ongoing. We will see the benefits of that over time, but vaccination won't impact on the current burden of disease. So that's really up to all of us to try and bring those numbers down, purely because until we do that, every thousand cases we have, people will end up in hospital, people will end up in intensive care, and people will die. So we do really need to hold firm on this, and I appreciate people are sick of hearing that. But unfortunately, this virus doesn't discriminate, and if we allow it to get out of control, it will. And I think what I'd like to sort of, again, highlight with people, this isn't, unfortunately, a situation where we will control the variant from the first report in the UK, or B117, and then the next variant will be different or easier to control. This is probably the new baseline for this virus. What we're seeing from a virology perspective is that in all of these variants, similar and in some cases identical mutations are emerging in different locations independently around the country. So these amino acid changes, or these mutations, suit this virus. This is this new baseline. It's still getting used to us.
The virus gets good at what it does.
It does.
Replicating.
It does. So that's why this is our new baseline, and we need to sort of, unfortunately, dig in for that.
The disease rate in younger people, in children and in that cohort, the 18 to 24-year-olds, are you concerned about that now? Because that's going up, I think, for the first time.
Yeah, it's the increase hasn't been dramatic, but you're right, it certainly it stopped declining, and maybe I think it's based on sort of on a single week's data, it seems to be increasing again. So it is obviously a concern. They're a group that have, I suppose, perhaps more than other groups, have suffered over the course of the pandemic. They obviously would be the group that ordinarily would be out socialising, working, studying. So it is very challenging. I think there's probably been a couple of outbreaks associated with third level education as well that may be skewing those figures. So it is a concern. To be honest, with the disease levels as they are across all age groups, they're a concern at this point in time. We do need to see that the rate of decline continue.
Can I ask you about meeting outdoors? Because, you know, through last summer, we saw there was very, very low rates of transmission. And it's because a lot of us were doing, you know, our socialising outdoors. And we have been told that it's hugely, you know, significantly less risk to be outdoors. What is NPHET's position on that? Because we're being told now that it may be months before we'll even be able to go for a walk with a friend in the park.
So you're right, outdoors is less risky than indoors, absolutely. But the concern at this stage is just about the burden of disease in the community. So what we want to get to in the context, and obviously government is working hard on this, on their new framework, is identifying what activities will be safe for people, because obviously it's, you know, people are sick of hearing what they can't do. And, you know, at NPHET, we're very cognizant of that. Government are very cognizant of that. What we want to try and do this year that maybe we didn't do well enough last year is explain to people what they can do and how they can do it safely. And that work is ongoing. But again, at the moment, with 6,000 cases a week, you know, the priority is obviously to suppress disease first and then look at how we can ease restrictions and how we can relax.
So what you're saying is that even that walk in a park with one other person distanced, you're saying that is... that is not something that could be allowed.
Oh, I'm not saying that it's not something that won't be allowed, but I think what the problem is, a lot of the time this comes down to mobility. So you're right, that socially distanced walk in the park is ideal if it's two people socially distanced in an empty park. But the problem is, if everybody's going out doing the same thing, you get people congregating, you get people going for a coffee either before they're got people going for ice cream. And as this isn't to criticise or blame people, this is really difficult. And it is, again, I would re-stress, it is more difficult now than it was last year. So it's not getting easier for people, aside from the fatigue element.
And are you saying it's higher risk because of this variant?
Yes.
Even outdoors, there's a risk level.
Outdoors is still much lower risk, and while the risk from the novel variant is increased, it's increasing a sort of a percentage. It's a proportion of a very low risk, so it's not increasing the risk dramatically, but it's just about congregation and about large groups of people outdoors that inevitably tends to happen when we lift restrictions. But I think the key thing for people to remember is that the public health measures are still effective. People have achieved a huge amount over the last 6 weeks. They really have, bringing our levels down, because let's not forget we were at 8,000 cases a day and we're now down to fewer than 1,000. So people have done incredibly well, but we need to sustain this and we need to do better.
Can I ask you about antigen testing, particularly in relation to nursing homes? Nursing Homes Ireland calling on NPHET to explore whether they can, you know, introduce antigen testing and just part of a regime where they can ease all those very tough restrictions on visitors. What are actually people's homes? They're in a very difficult situation there. Would NPHET be minded to do that?
So it's a really good question. So as you know, as we've talked about this on the show before, there's a huge amount of work has gone on. The HSC has carried out. Dr. Mary Keoghan and Dr. Lorraine Doherty have led the work on this. Professor Cara Martin from Trinity as well, have done a huge amount of evaluation and validation work. And what we've seen is that these antigen tests work well in symptomatic individuals, in outbreak settings or in hospital outbreaks, and they work quite well in that context. And they actually have been rolled out across the system, but thankfully at the moment people have access to PCR. So the uptake of antigen testing hasn't been huge. Now at the moment, so that's in symptomatic people who are sick. What we're doing at the moment, and this is led by Mark Ferguson of Science Foundation Ireland. He's leading a group to look at their use in asymptomatic individuals, so people who don't have symptoms, and how the antigen tests perform in that group. Unfortunately, preliminary data would suggest that the sensitivity drops off quite dramatically in people who don't have symptoms. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't a role for them, but you have to compensate for that lack of sensitivity. So you can compensate for that with either increasing the frequency, increasing the number of people you test, or else you have a reflex testing to PCR. But as I said, I don't want to preempt the outcome of Mark's group. It said it's really important, and I can understand the frustration that people would have.
And particularly in nursing homes.
Yeah, like,
do we have to tell people in nursing homes that they may be some time, even though they're now vaccinated, that it may be some time before we will see, you know, family members being allowed in?
So I think this came up at the press briefing on Thursday as well. So again, there's a piece of work, it was discussed at NPHET on Thursday, there's a piece of work ongoing to look at the visitation guidelines around people being vaccinated. Because the thing is, vaccines are great, but when there's so much virus circulating, again, the risk still remains high. So again, what we need to do is concentrate on getting the burden of disease down, and then we'll see the benefits of vaccination over the coming months.
Can I just, before I let you go, we have 60 public health doctors here compared to 160 in Scotland, just to take one example. When we eventually get case numbers down to a point where retrospective tracking and tracing can occur, will we be able to do it even then? Because do we simply have the resources in public health to tackle it at that level?
Yeah, no, again, it's a really important issue. And again, this has been raised with government, and my understanding is that government is committed. But sorry, we don't, in answer to your question, we don't have enough specialists in public health medicine. In part, that's because of the recruitment issue, because of the status of their contract, is that I don't want to get involved into an IOR issue. But, you know, the work they're doing in the context of a pandemic, and even outside of a pandemic, like, specialists in public health medicine shouldn't be firefighting. It's about health protection in advance of the fire. So they're a vital resource. And as I said, we do need to implement change. We need to increase the resources allocated to public health, because public health is population health. As I said, and I don't think people appreciate how important they are in pre-pandemic and inter-pandemic times.
Okay. Cillian de Gascoigne, many thanks for coming into us with that today.
Thanks, Katie.